Good morning. Thank you guys for having me. The introduction did it, so you don't need to know much more about me. But I'm really glad to be here. I think on my journey, I'm going to share more about my story later, but we're going to talk today about being mentally and spiritually strong, which I think might has been a theme for y'all, or is what at least they told me to talk about. And one of those key pieces of that has been community and my village and my girlfriends. So I think it's wonderful to see you all here showing up and saying, hey, we're all in this together. We're all moms and we don't know what we're doing. And let's talk about it and let's commune about it. So y'all are on the right path already. So, okay, let's get started. Let me get this. I was wanting my password. Hold on. Of course. Okay, so when we think of being strong, right, we think of being maybe physically strong. I brought my little weights. Here they are, right? We think of like working out, working our body, making our muscles stronger. And that takes effort. That takes commitment. That takes some reps, right? I wish I could do just get skinny being on the couch, right? But that doesn't work that way. So we have to do these heavy things. We have to kind of work our muscles to be strong. And I think when I was thinking about being mentally and spiritually strong, I think it's the same way. It takes action. It takes intention. It takes working out those muscles. And I'll share a little bit of my story in a little bit, but essentially it's like mental spiritual weightlifting. And being intentional with what that looks like, I think, is a really important part of our life, because we don't know. I was thinking about that song that we just sang about Goliath. We all have our own giants that we're facing, and they change and they're different. We don't know what's coming down the road, and we don't need to live in fear of what's coming down the road. But the more we prepare ourselves and the more we find our strength in our faith and in our friendships and in our family, the more prepared we are to face those giants when they do come. So as we jump in, I just want to take a minute to just kind of arrive. I want everyone to just take a deep breath. Kind of let the weight of the morning go off of you. I don't know what your morning was like, if it was wild and crazy, if it was calm and peaceful. I don't know if that happens with a room full of moms. Maybe someone had a calm, peaceful morning. I am also, whoever said they're terrified of their 13-year-old on the stage, I'm terrified of my I'm terrified of my 16-year-old. And like school's getting out and my anxiety's going up and I'm like, oh, she's coming home. Okay, we can do this. Like, is she gonna be nice? Is she gonna be mean? I don't know. She definitely did not like my outfit this morning, I'll tell you that. I was like, how did I do? And she was like, it's okay. It's okay. I was like, all right, it's fine. She's 16 and she's a wonderful 16, but she's 16. So just as we're here, I just hope you can kind of just let go of everything that's happening outside of these walls. Your kids are taken care of. Your car is parked. Just breathe. There was food provided. I attended MOPS, which is Mothers of Preschoolers, very similar to this, when I lived in Colorado and my kids were little. And it was like my favorite morning because there was food and I didn't have to feed myself and it felt amazing. Except the mornings I was cooking. When you're the one bringing it, it was more stressful. The other days were great. So thanks to whoever brought food. All right, let's start with mental strength. So raise your hand if you're a tired mom, because I am. Yeah, right? You three in the back that don't have kids at home, I know you're tired too. You got grandkids. Y'all didn't raise your hand. They're my friends. They know. My mom's back there. I make you tired. My kids make you tired. It's fine. We're all tired. We're exhausted. We're worn out. We've got a lot to do in the day. And we only have so much energy. And our sweet little babies that we brought into this world know how to push every single button. And they find more buttons and more buttons. And that's normal. But it's something that we have to dig into and think, I'm tired. And that's just part of being a mom. But also, how can I restore myself? So when we think about, if you can go to the next slide, Miles, that stress in the brain slide, perfect. I'm going to get a little nerdy because I took a neuroscience class in college in my psychology, and I like kind of wish that I had pursued that career sometimes. I'm fascinated by the brain. So the limbic system, which you've probably heard of, is the part of the brain that controls our behavior and emotional responses. It's crucial when it comes to survival skills, which being a mom is kind of survival skills. Like survival behaviors are feeding, fight or flight, reproduction, caring for your offspring. And when we're stressed and exhausted, which is just called adulting, if you didn't know that, stress and exhaustion is called adulting, our brain releases the adrenaline, the cortisol, and it prepares us for fight or flight. So whether we know it or not, we often just wake up in a fight or flight mode, right? Thinking about your day or what do you have to do, or maybe the baby woke you up and then you're, I'm up. So up there, it's got the amygdala somewhere. I can't read it from here. That's the fear center. So you've got that going off when you're stressed. You've got your hippocampus, which starts firing rapidly when you're stressed and tired, which affects your ability to think, learn, and recall information. You get to the kitchen and you're like, what the heck did they ask to drink? Was it milk or apple juice? Like, I don't remember. I walked to a different room. I've forgotten what I was doing already. So our brains literally inflame when we're stressed. And I don't say that to depress you, because there's things you can do to calm it down. But over time, those problems or that inflammation becomes problems, and it becomes harder to kind of learn to control. And when you hear my story of grief and trauma, and I mean, my limbic system has been out of whack. And a lot of what I've learned is learning how to kind of bring it back to calm. So the other picture I have up here is how it feels. So I found this visual. I thought it was kind of good. Like, you have the crazy swirly brain, right, which is our anxious brain. It's our stress brain. And then you have the calm, what our brain is supposed to look like, which is probably what it looked like in the womb when our babies and we were all, like, just safe and comfortable. And it was just this perfect brain that God was forming. And then you come out of the womb and you're like, ah, and they're screaming. And the mom is like, what's happening? And your brain can go into these patterns, right? And so I like that visual, because when I see it, I kind of look at the two. I just feel calmer looking at the blue head, right? The blue brain. And I think that's where I want to get. How do I get more of that, less of the other brain in my life? And it takes time to heal. I think when we talk about mental strength, we need to restore our minds. When we talk about physical strength, we do physical things. We weightlift and we run and we work harder to build our body and work our muscles and our organs. But when we talk about mental strength, sometimes you are working hard, sometimes you're learning something or reading something, but a lot of what our brain needs is restore, just to calm and heal. And they need a break from overwork the same way your muscles do. You can't go lift weights at the gym every day, you'll burn out. So we need to be gentle with ourselves. Some of that mental restoration can look like naps, and don't feel guilty about it. I'm really good at feeling guilty about naps. Time alone, if you're a person that likes to be alone, time with friends away from your husband and your kids, engaging activities that create peace, things that help you escape. For me, being an artist, helping, like, when I create stuff, I get lost, and it's wonderful. Like, I forget that there's people, I forget that there's children to feed, I forget that there's bedtimes, and it is so restoring to my heart and to my brain, because the world just vanished. And so what I want to encourage you is to think about those things. Like, maybe you love to read, maybe you like can escape into that. Maybe you love movies. Maybe you love TV. Maybe you love, what's it called? Like, reality TV. I don't know. Maybe you love All My Children. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Whatever's, you know, your thing, I think those are things that give you a break. And it's okay to take a break. It's okay to just escape. And when we do escape the pressures of our life, all of these systems calm down and we move from that crazy brain to that very calm brain, and our literally your brain shrinks. Like they see it in MRIs, your brain starts to shrink. The other thing with the list of things to do, I actually made a list of things that helped me. Because when you're, it's like when you go to the grocery store and you didn't make a list. You're just like, what in the world do I need? I don't remember. Do I have this at home? I don't know. And then you end up buying multiple things. My mom just told me she has like 5 boxes of Bisquick. Evidently, she just keeps buying Bisquick, which I do too. And you can't remember. You don't know what you need. You don't know what ingredients. You can't think of anything for dinner. Like I do that. I get to the grocery. You would think it would inspire me. Maybe it inspires some of you. I get to the grocery store. If I don't have a list and a plan, I'm like, I know how to cook nothing. And I don't know even what to buy to make something. So the list helps you. It keeps you organized. When you're overwhelmed in that store, it tells you where to go, what aisle to go to, how to get what you need. The same way thinking through what's good for me, what's good for my soul, what's good for my heart, what's good for my mind. Knowing that ahead of time before you're at a level 10 stress helps you know how to get back down. So that's been one of my favorite tools, is just really looking at my life, and that's changed over seasons, of what is good for me right now, what helps me right now. It might be a walk. It might be, like we said, a nap, doing something creative. So mental strength is a piece of it. Spiritual strength. I have 3 favorite things about God. When I think about my favorite things, these are them. Number 1, that he's Elohim, which is the Hebrew word for the great creator. Obviously, as an artist, that inspires me, because everything we see, everyone we see was created by him. And I find that fascinating. Like, to go from nothingness to creating all of this is just incredible. Number 2, that he is El Roy, which is the Hebrew word for the God who sees me. And this became really important when my husband passed, because I felt so unseen and uncared for and scared, and that he saw me. He saw me on the floor of the bathroom crying. He saw me trying to help the kids. He saw me doing all the things that I was having to do now alone. Also a little scary that he sees everything and who all your thoughts, right? It's like, oh, wait, just ignore some of this. But that's the beautiful part of the relationship with him. The third thing, my third favorite thing about God, is that he gave us his Holy Spirit. And that's where we're going to talk about next, that we can access him at any time. The God of the universe cares so much about each of us that he gave us the Holy Spirit to be able to know him, to get words from him, to get clarity from him at any time. We can hear God's voice through that Spirit, and that is incredible. Like, that is the best, like, Christmas present you could imagine, is that constant access. On the next slide, one of my favorite verses is John 14:26. Really should have worn my glasses. But the Helper, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and will remind you of all that I have said to you. That is so comforting to me about the Spirit, because I can't keep all things in my head. I can't remember everything I've learned or what God taught me, or, you know, I'll be here at Southside on church on Sunday and God, that was a great message. And by the time I'm home, I'm like, what are we talking about? I don't know. I think it was good. Because there's just so much going on, right, up in our heads. And I just love that, because I feel like the Spirit brings back what you need when you need it. He will give you the wisdom when you need the wisdom. He'll give you the words, or he'll give you the way or the path or the steps to take. And I think true spiritual strength, when I was praying through this, it comes in our listening. And we have to learn how to be good listeners, to be good listeners to that spirit that's trying to talk to us all the time. And if we're not listening, we're going to miss it. And he's going to keep talking and keep talking. If I was God, I'd be real frustrated, right? When you have to say, put on your shoes 5 times to your kid, it's frustrating. God doesn't get tired like that. I also think that's pretty amazing. There's this song that I've had on repeat, and I threw it in here this morning. I was like, I'm going to bring that up. Have y'all heard the song called Quiet? It's by Elevation Worship, I believe. I'm just going to read a little piece of it because I've had it on repeat all this week. And I think it speaks to that listening to that Holy Spirit. So it says, here we go again, my mind racing. I can't seem to win. All these crazy thoughts and feelings, it's like it never ends until your voice breaks through my noise. And I know I'm not alone. You will fight my battles if I will just be still. I love that line. You will fight my battles if I'll just be still. Why would I keep running when you're right here? I'll just be quiet and let you speak through the silence. Here I am, no more hiding. You are in this moment. I won't fight it. I'll just be quiet. It's a great song. That's about the first half. But there's something to being quiet. And when we're building this spiritual strength that we're talking about, listening and quiet are one of the biggest pieces. Other piece I think about is reading. I don't always read my Bible every day. I try to read my Bible every day. After Christian died, I couldn't read anything. I think I say that in my story, but I got a coloring Bible because, again, artist coloring. I was like, well, I can color. Like, let's just pretend to read and color some pages. Looks like I read it. It was just hard for me to digest during that time, but this has become such a daily practice for me. And I think about the Bible like little bank deposits, or like a devotion you're reading, or a book or a podcast you're listening to that's about your faith. It's like little wisdom, little, like in a piggy bank, you're just putting pennies in. And that builds up. It might not seem like much today. You might sit down and be like, I just didn't understand a word I read. You might not be able to focus, but it's still a deposit. And you're putting those in. And then when those giants come, when that Goliath comes, when you've had a bad day, or your kid's pushing your buttons, or you're anxious because your daughter's coming home, you've deposited stuff and you have a resource. And so I would just encourage you to keep making deposits. I'm gonna skip that part. For some reason, I'm like, nope. So after my husband died, I said it was really hard for me to read, and I found myself reading Proverbs every day. And now that I work with widows and talk to people about grief, everyone goes to the Psalms. Which is wonderful because they cry out, right? They're crying out to God and they're beautiful. I love the Psalms. But I was like, why the heck was I in Proverbs for so long? Like that, I feel like the black sheep. Like what was it about Proverbs? But that's where now I see the Spirit led me. It was all I could digest because my world was turned upside down. I couldn't think, I couldn't focus, I couldn't concentrate on anything. But I knew I was like desperate for Jesus and begging for his help. And all I could do is read like 1 or 2 verses of Psalms a day, and just 1 or 2 words would pop out to me. And that was all I could take in. And I clung to those words. I remember being also frustrated because I was like, Jesus, you gotta tell me all the things. I need to know what to do and when to do it and how to do this and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, nope, all you need is this little deposit of wisdom. this little word over here, this little Proverbs over here, because he knew that's what I needed. And he knew that later, I didn't need the Bible stories that we learn in Sunday school. I knew them. I didn't need to reread those. I didn't need to dig anywhere else but in the book of wisdom, because he knew I needed to be wise. And I'm wise because he chose me. I'm only wise when I listen. When I don't, I'm not so much. But that's why we have wisdom books, to give us guidance, to give us pieces that we need. And wisdom guides my steps. It helps me make decisions. It helps me know how to be a wise person when I'm not. There's nothing special about me. I was telling someone this morning when we were in the prayer room, I said, I think I wrote this whole morning just because I needed to hear myself say all this. So I hope y'all like what I'm saying, but I needed to hear this again, that I want to be a wise person. And Proverbs has three different, actually, can you go to the next slide, Miles? Proverbs has three, these are some pictures from my coloring, where I could just pull out words, but Proverbs has three different types of people that it talks about. It talks about the wise, the foolish, and the simple. And I know I want to be the wise person. And these have guided my life for the last 6 years. So I'd encourage you to think about, as I wrap up the spiritual piece, is what can you implement? What spiritual practice can you implement that's going to put a deposit in your bank every single day? Something that you can, I hesitate to say stick to, because no one can stick to anything when we're as busy as we are. But maybe go back to that list of things that you have that I can pull from each day that's good for me. And y'all, also, you can talk to Jesus everywhere. I literally have just started having houseplants, and I don't kill them, and it's a miracle. Everything outside I kill, inside they're great. But watering my plants is the most therapeutic thing, to fill the little bucket and watch it pour out, and I just calmly go about my house. I'm like, I think this may be a spiritual practice. Like, this is maybe good for me. So I might buy more plants, because then I can go everywhere and water them. But thinking about those things that are good for you. All right, hard left turn. I'm going to tell you a little bit of my story. And I call it a hard left turn. It's really just a diving deeper. It's taking what we just kind of discussed and pulling it in to what does that really look like in our life. So when I think of being mentally and spiritually strong, I love those words, but what immediately came to me out of thinking through what that is and what we've talked about is the goal is to live with an open hands and open heart. That's the goal. That's the deepest level of strength. I was talking to a couple of ladies about control in the breakfast line, and how we love to control everything. And that's not how God calls us to live. He calls us to live with open hands and an open heart. So next slide, you can see a picture of my husband, Christian, and my kiddos. These are some pictures from several years ago now. That one on the bottom left is our very last picture we got together. So that's a special one for us. And this Bible verse, this Proverbs, don't be impressed with your own wisdom. Instead, be in awe of the Lord. Then you will have healing for your body and strength for your bones. That's what grief felt like for me. I needed strength for my bones. I was so weak all the way down to the inside of my bones. So March 2nd of 2019, we were having a normal Saturday morning. Tyler was 5, he was up watching cartoons. Caroline was 10 and had just kind of started sleeping late. And my husband, Christian, got dressed and headed to the gym. He was putting on his, he was like at a boxing gym. So he's like wrapping his hands and doing all the things. And we're talking about our plans for the day. And he kissed me goodbye. And it was not, you know, I look back and I'm like, God, wouldn't it be great if that was like a big romantic kiss? No, it was just the normal, like, see you later. But it was just a normal day. And I got another cup of coffee. I went back. I was so excited. I was finishing a novel I was reading. God is so good. Again, the Holy Spirit led me to this author. This was the second book of hers that I had read. And this one was called A Year of Pleasures, and it was about a widow in her first year after losing her husband. And that's the novel I finished while he went to the gym and never came back. So God works in mysterious ways. About an hour later, I got a phone call from the police, and an officer was telling me that my husband was having a heart attack. I was sure it was like a panic attack. A lot of people go to the hospital for those, thinking it's a heart attack. He was 42, I was 38. But I remember the whole world, I remember standing in our kitchen, and the whole world went dark, and I went numb. I don't know if y'all have ever had that with trauma, just numb all the way to my fingertips. I called my mom, who was living in Texas at the time, because I didn't know what to do with the kids. I was like, do I take them? Do I not? It's not a heart attack. What? They'll be fine. Like, they need to go see their dad. I don't know what to do. She was like, nope, call someone. You go. Have someone come be with them. So wisdom from mom came. And when I got to the ER, the chaplain came out of the emergency room to meet me. And my husband was a hospital chaplain. And I knew that's not good. That was his job, was to go out when it's just more the bad news, right? You're not just going to have any the security guy or whatever bring you back. So that put me off guard, but I was like, no. Like, I don't know. But when I went into the ER doctor came out of his room, and I could see him, and they were doing CPR still. And he said, we've been doing CPR for almost an hour. He's not going to come back. And we don't know why. The doctor was crying. Nurses were crying. The chaplain was crying. Some of them knew Christian because he had been around the hospital with his job. And they didn't understand why someone so young, just they, like, once his heart stopped, it never revived. And that was unusual for his age. So the next option was we keep doing CPR or we stop, but they needed my permission for them to stop, and that was hard to agree to let them stop. But I knew there was nothing they could do. He and I had talked about with his job, we talked about a lot of ways to die, ways we don't want to die, what to do after death, you know, because that was his job. And so I knew he didn't want to live on machines. He didn't, you know, even if something came back. So I agreed that they could stop CPR, and I was left sitting with him. Thankfully, they let me stay for a long, long time, and I sat with him for hours. And they let me grieve, and they let me be with him, and they brought paperwork, and the paperwork's the worst, but you just have to do it. And the chaplain was so cute. He was like, I apologize, but we have to, this is what this form means. I'm like, I know, because my husband gave the forms. Like, I know what it means. I'll fill it out. But that, I've never felt more vulnerable than I did in those few hours. And after that, because my whole, everything I knew to be true was not, and just disappeared in a heartbeat. Brené Brown has a quote on the next slide that says, vulnerability is not about winning or losing. It's about having the courage to show up when you can't control the outcome. So when I was driving to the hospital, of course I was going to go. The police called. You go when the police call and say you need to go somewhere. It was desperation. Of course I had to go see. I didn't think about it. I just went. But now that I'm sitting with Christian and he's gone, now I'm thinking about how am I going to tell my children? What am I going to tell my children? How are we going to do this? And that, again, the vulnerability, but that courage to show up was 100% Holy Spirit. That was the scariest. I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, was that scarier? It might have been scarier to like have to go tell my kids. at 5 and 10 that their dad was gone. So it was terrifying. I walked back into our house. Tyler was 5. He started crying immediately, which was unusual for, I mean, they all cry when they're kids, but like, I hadn't really seen him cry from an emotion like that, right? Like understanding something like that. Caroline also started crying. She was 10, and she immediately asked me, and this blew me away, who's going to walk me down the aisle when I get married? And that, I mean, for her to jump to that, right? Little girls think about that one day. And what I think when I look back at that is it would have been so easy to close my heart off. I wanted to so bad. I was so vulnerable and I was so scared. But I had to learn how to gently hold those pieces. Like I ripped up some paper. I had something to bring, but I forgot it. Like I felt like all these pieces of paper, right? Just torn and broken. And I had to hold them for God to mend me back together. And I know he was holding them too, but I didn't feel it at the time. And over the last 6 years, we're about to have 6 years this Sunday, which is hard to believe. He has sewn me back together. And he has created this beautiful, I mean, all these pictures are since Christian's been gone, like this beautiful new life and new friends, new patterns. It's like, I feel like there's scars and stitches all together that create this beautiful new life that I never could have dreamed of when I was in the depths of grief. And I miss him every day. That doesn't change. And I still love him. That won't ever change. But there's this unexpected, beautiful life. And God will mend those pieces back together. And I think that's where this open hands, open heart has come from. Because we love control. I think about Eve. I don't remember where I heard this or learned it or read it. Eve in the Garden of Eden, Eve wanted control. God said, don't eat from that tree. But she wanted the knowledge. She wanted to know what was next. She didn't like the mystery of the unknown. None of us do. And she took control. And we see then where that got us. But we all do that. We want to hold things so tightly. But really, it's safer to live with open hands, open heart. It sounds scary. I think about like our kids crossing the street. Okay, so if you're with your littles and you're crossing a busy street and you're like, nope, I got it. I'm controlling everything. I'm lifting my weights. I got it. Who's holding their little hands, right? How are they going to get safely across the street? Because you are gripping so hard to the things that you're controlling. And I mean, this is a daily struggle for me, for sure. We need to put down those weights. We need to lean into God. He will sustain us. And all of this takes practice. This is where that mental, spiritual strength and resilience comes in. But what I've learned is it's also where joy comes in. It's where freedom comes in. It's where we can give our kids what they really need, not what we think they need, but what they really need, because that wisdom is coming from the Spirit through us. God calls us to live radically, and that's hard. The world tells us to hold on to everything and to prepare. And God says, let go. Let me have it. So as we wrap up, I've got three things as we go. The first one is I want you to just close your eyes for a minute. I want you to bring attention to your hands and the muscles and your fingers. And notice what they feel like. Do they feel tired or heavy? Maybe they feel light today. And I want you to clench them. Like you're holding something. And notice the tension that's there. And then I want you to take a breath and I want you to lay them open. Just let them fall open and try and relax all those muscles. and feel what it feels like to let go. And think about the idea, if you approached God every day with open hands, what could he take from you that you don't need to hold? And what would you be then free to receive from him that you couldn't receive with those clenched fists? All right, you can open your eyes back up. I also want to encourage you again, like we talked about, find a way to connect with God daily, whatever that looks like. It'll be different for each of you. Doesn't matter what it is. Just find it. Find it for yourself and make those little deposits every day. The Holy Spirit will meet you there. And community, that's the third thing I wanted to leave you with, was the importance of community. This is a beautiful community. I'm glad you have this. Find other people that are supportive. When you're vulnerable, when you're scared, when you don't know what to do, find those people that you can talk to, that you can be real with. Be wise about who those people are, because not everyone in our life are those people. And that's okay. Think through who are my people that I can really let in, and then be there for them in return. Because there is beauty to be found in all these broken pieces that we bring that God will sew back together for us. So thank you for having me today. It's a good morning.